Namaste. This is Francie, and welcome back to the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast, a place where we get to go deep with yogis, thought leaders, cultural creatives, and consciousness explorers to spread love, inspire you, and spread the good vibes. I believe that yoga is helping to change the planet, so I really hope you enjoy this episode. If you want to stay connected, sign up for our love letter at pureflow.yoga and receive our free weekly love and inspirations, as well as be the first to know about our new podcast and blog releases. We'll also share special deals here on our yoga retreats and trainings that we just don't share anywhere else. And if you like this episode and want to keep supporting us to create free, awesome things for you, feel free to support us with a monthly contribution. You can find that at pureflow.yoga/podcast. Your journey to becoming more inspired and connected begins now. Welcome to the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast. Today, I am so honored to welcome Bex Tyrer to the show. Scotland-born and raised and Oxford-educated with a graduate degree, MPhil in Development Studies, Bex Tyrer has been Asia-based for the past 13 years and sharing her passion of yoga and yoga activism for the past 12, mostly here in Bali at the Yoga Barn. Here, she shared her wisdom and experience with literally hundreds of teacher trainees and thousands of students and practitioners from all over the world. While she teaches a wide range of styles, including vinyasa, yin, restorative, power, hatha, and acro yoga, at the core of it all, her true gift is to simply share her personal and intimate relationship with yoga while helping to remind people that yoga cannot be simplified into a set of postural cues or alignment. Yoga is enormous, it is ancient, it is wise, it is diverse. And what Bex shares is a humble attempt to share what her years of dedicated study have revealed to her. Bex has had the privilege of being guided by some great teachers, including Angela Farmer, Uma Dinsmore-Tooley, Denise Payne, and Mark Whitwell, to name a few. Her extensive travels in Tibet, Nepal, and India showed her that much of what is now sold and advertised has very little in common with the wealth of yoga waiting for us to individually activate. Her education, life journey, and love for yoga took Bex into the field of yoga activism to establish Freedom Through Movement projects in Calcutta, Kathmandu, and Palestine. Her love for wisdom and fascination with the human experience breathes life into yoga philosophy, history, and practice. Her project, Freedom Through Movement, is a way to help you embrace your life. Bex, I am so happy to have you here. Thank you for coming and sharing.
Thank you so much for that epic introduction.
It's all just a reflection of who you are and what you've been doing. I would love you to tell me, where are you at in your journey? What are you passionate about sharing?
So currently, it's all about slowing down and just embracing life a little more fully. And it's actually quite simple to do that, but many of us have spent a lifetime making it really complicated. So I was in a pretty intense accident 7 months ago, and I sustained burns over 30% of my body. And you were an incredible support to me, so thank you so much.
Honor.
And yet that's turned my world upside down, and how I see the world as well, it's turned that upside down. And it's taken me quite a while to kind of get back on my feet again, and I'm really grateful that, you know, I can do, but I'm also quite tentative about taking these new steps, the first steps back out. So yeah, a lot right now is about slowing down and about changing my priorities and my values from perhaps being so busy and needing to be successful at stuff, even as a so-called successful yoga teacher, and instead just putting time and investing in what's important, which is my friends and people I care about, and being outside and in the nature and just letting myself rest. So I guess my journey is taking me to simple things.
Beautiful. And yeah, wow, thank you so much for your courage in sharing this with our listeners. I know that before the accident, you were sharing a lot of work on body image. And I wonder how that experience solidified or challenged what you were sharing, and what it is about body image that you do feel passionate about sharing with the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of curious, because I initially curated the body image course aimed primarily for women, and who, from my perspective, tend to be the ones who suffer most from what it is to be a woman and invest a whole lot of energy in maintaining the outer appearance and, yeah, image of what that entails. And many of the time at risk of their own health. Mm. And speaking from experience, when I had, you know, 10 years of eating disorders throughout the whole of my 20s, wow, that I was still practicing yoga and even teaching yoga at that time. So there was a real gap between a so-called liberation teaching, if that's what you or I perceive yoga to be, and my lived reality, which was one of quite a lot of internal and silent pain and suffering. So the body image course was really about unpacking that. It's like, well, you know, what went wrong? What went wrong with commercial yoga, in that there's so many women showing up to practice and yet on the inside deeply unhappy and not allowing themselves to be free, not allowing themselves to claim full health, and not allowing themselves to embrace life, right? Because when we are restricting eating, we're restricting our life flow. And I feel it also comes from feeling really separate from everything. You know, it's like the opposite of yoga, because it's that sense of separation that allows us to fall victim to addictions. And an eating disorder is an addiction. So I wanted to provide a forum where we could gather and explore this kind of bridge between our yoga exploration and the practice of yoga and full optimum health, and at the same time kind of really question how we view our own body image and whether that image is like authentic, whether that's actually like what I find valuable, or that I've taken on from around me, from what other people have told. Like, for me to be valuable, I have to look like this and act like this and so on and so on. And also, I think it keeps so many women kind of trapped in this like small little bubble, because we all know that there's a lot far greater concerns going on in the world that could really benefit from all of us really being more engaged with. So if we're preoccupied with this sense of inadequacy or lack of self-worth, and that keeps us sort of just pouring our attention into body image issues, then we're not really available to like rise to the bigger questions, you know? So yeah, it was quite curious that then I was kind of scarred over part of my body, because I hadn't really thought of scarring as body image. Of course it is. But I was more getting at the eating disorders and restricted eating side of it. So I think actually it's been amazing, because I prepared myself really well for this, you know? And right now, like, the scars, the appearance of the scars doesn't bother me as perhaps it would have done kind of 10 or 15 years ago. For sure, like, the pain of the scars bothers me, and what they remind me of, like the pain they remind me of. Mm-hmm. So I'm really working on now in changing the narrative. So rather than the scars reminding me of pain, can I let them remind me of my strength and of the love that surrounded me and caught me?
I've been reading just a little bit about a concept known as post-traumatic growth, you know, and all I really know about it is what the word implies, you know, that we have all these experiences in our life, you know, this fight or flight or freeze experience. And then, you know, it's not so much what happens, but our relationship to what happens next. And it sounds like, you know, this was a deeply traumatic and challenging experience. And it sounds like yoga has helped you with resilience along the way.
Yeah, for sure. It's so funny, because you know, again, I often think that we do a yoga practice or embark upon different healing modalities to help us process what's happened. But actually, now I also see that we do it to prepare for the future, to prepare for future and challenging events. And in fact, that was like one of the hidden, one of the many hidden surprises in this, was that yoga has given me a lot of strength to embrace what life's handed me, and also the ability to put it into perspective. So without kind of minimalizing the challenges that I've been through, it's also not so bad, right? I'm sitting here 7 months later in Bali talking to you, and it's that ability to
the beat goes on.
Yeah, to be in it and embrace it, but without kind of numbing from it, but also to put it in perspective and see like the bigger picture.
I always thought if I ever were to get a tattoo, and I don't have any, but it might say "This too shall pass."
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you mentioned some of my teachers in the bio, and Denise Payne has, you know, had a profound influence on me as an individual, perhaps even more than a yoga teacher, and I guess that's where it really counts. But she would also always say, you can do anything for one more breath. And that really came back to me a lot when I was in a lot of pain and sort of recovering from the burns. And I feel it's so true. We can just stay present with what's here right now, rather than thinking, oh, it's too much for me, I can't handle it, or how long is it going on for? So yeah, you can do anything for one more breath.
Wow, thank you for that. That's beautiful. Thank you, Denise. I want to just cycle back for a moment to the body image and eating disorder. What is it that, you know, was it a light bulb that finally went off? What precipitated you finally moving to a place of healing from that? A decade is a long time to be suffering in that way. And do you have recommendations or suggestions for people who are going through a similar challenge? What is the first step to, I don't know, self-love or to...
Yeah, I mean, it's so, so curious. I feel that life has, it's kind of given me certain experiences as direct qualifications in a way to explore certain issues such as body image, eating disorders, and right now trauma. Yet I'm not a specialist or therapist or psychologist, right? So just saying that out loud. So all I can speak from is my own experience, and just like there wasn't one cause that started all of this. There also wasn't one thing that kind of ended it. But I would say definitely like putting myself in an environment that I could just start to slow down and rest and feel, which is what happened when I came to Bali, and get into a regular practice. I mean, I had a regular practice before, but it was one that kind of berated my body as opposed to celebrated it. And oh, there were so many things. I also spent some time going between Bali and Kolkata, and I was working with people who were really destitute and really suffering from extreme poverty, and they were so poor that they could barely feed themselves, and so weak that they didn't even have the energy to give donated or like feed themselves with donated food. So I was literally hand feeding people, and for sure that makes it really hard to then abuse myself when I can just really be faced with that stark reality of how so many people have so little and I have so much. So how, like, in a way, how dare I kind of just treat myself and food like that? And that was kind of a little bit of a wake up. Another thing was getting really close to the land again and reconnected to the land. I think it's pretty typical for many of us just to grow up, even if we're fascinated by nature, to be treating it like as a resource as opposed to a source. So I spent some time on a capoeira farm in Brazil, and we had to, you know, we had to grow our own food and then cook food for one another. And there were, you know, it was such a simple life, and it really helped me to remember that important link that we innately have between ourselves and the elements. And yoga's all about that, right? It's all about that. But it's one thing talking about it in a studio, and another thing being in it and immersed in it, in the land. And then finally, I would say it was allowing myself to feel a great deal of emotion. And I feel many of us are incredibly sensitive and we've never been taught what to do with that sensitivity. So instead, we try to numb it out. So through not eating or like anorexia or bulimia, that's really numbing. You know, you're just not allowing yourself to feel what your body needs. And the same thing with other addictions, right? You're not listening to what your body needs and you're overriding that. So once we're able to feel a little more and just let those emotions kind of flow, I feel that a huge pressure was released from me. And I no longer had to fear it or try and control it. And again, going back to Denise Payne, she once said to me, like, emotions won't kill you, but not feeling them will.
Oof. Good one.
Yeah. I don't know whether that answered your question, but that was a few things.
Well, I mean, it just, I'm so wrapped up in your story and just feeling how big of a teacher our emotions are, especially if we listen to them, and what a gift. And the gift and the challenge. So yeah, I think that's definitely helped to answer the question, and thank you. You have traveled so far and wide, and you know, we made mention of your trips to Nepal, and you've just shared about India, and you've spent some time in Tibet, and you've helped to activate this yoga through movement project all over. What is that project about? Can you tell us?
Sure. So actually a little bit different everywhere I go. So let me go back now about 15 years to when I first went to Palestine during the Second Intifada. And at that point, I was practicing yoga, but I wasn't teaching yoga. And I was there as an activist because I really, I felt really shocked and horrified about what was going on and my own country's participation in that. And as a so-called citizen of a democratic country, I felt like I had to a duty and a responsibility to go and be part of the solution. So perhaps that was quite naive, but it definitely opened my eyes to a lot of the way the world works. And I ended up staying for a couple of years there. And whilst I was there, again, I wasn't well, I wasn't nourishing myself. And many of my colleagues and activists also weren't very well. But that was all kind of unspoken, and we just got on with it because there were more important things, right? There was like the occupation and people really suffering from daily concerns. So we just got along with our life. And after a couple of years, I realized that I was just really angry and wasn't really able to be productive or supportive to the cause, and I left. And on reflection, I realized that I hadn't really had much support for my own kind of welfare or well-being, and that a practice such as yoga would have been perfect, but I didn't have the discipline at that time to kind of embark upon that. And so initially I went back years later to share yoga with local people, with Palestinians, and also with activists or people who might be there. And of course, when I went back, I found that some incredible local Palestinian women had already opened up yoga studios.
Oh, wonderful.
So my work now is to go and to support them in whatever capacity I can, mm-hmm. because many of those practitioners don't have the resources or even the political freedoms to go and travel elsewhere and to take retreats or trainings. So if I can go in and share a week or 2 weeks of intensive training, then perhaps that will have, you know, a knock-on effect for those teachers to then be able to go on and share it. I also, in Kathmandu and Kolkata, my projects were, you know, it was quite small and very humble, but just ways that I can share yoga with especially young women who might have been through some really tough situations. Mm. So primarily women who had survived sex trafficking, and how an embodied practice can help them to release tension and to step back into their own power. So very simple, and many of those women are kind of my teachers in many other ways. I'm just there to share an embodied practice for them.
So that's amazing, and thank you so much for the work that you've been doing in the world. It is so valuable and appreciated. So what does the word yoga activism mean?
Well, I have kind of two different explorations of that. One is perhaps the most obvious, which is how can we take yoga into areas which are perhaps really in need of like a physical practice. And by that I mean these places like Palestine or Kolkata or Kathmandu, where there's not like a great big space for people to go and move, or even to have sort of a more quiet meditative practice. You know, these are big kind of noisy cities or places of conflict. And also, how can we take yoga into places that perhaps traditionally yoga hasn't been kind of, I don't know how to describe it, hasn't been welcomed there? Like, yoga's become quite exclusive, I would say. So perhaps it's the other way around. Like, we've made yoga very exclusive and very stereotypical, as in it's a kind of practice for fairly wealthy middle class women, white women. And I think that's a real shame, because it's not come from there, right? And yet many of my friends in these places associate, especially in Palestine, just think, well, why would I practice yoga? Like, that's for people who have everything, you know? That's a luxury. Okay. Or that isn't, that hasn't done me any good, because there's lots of people practicing yoga who are apparently talking about peace and freedom, and yet they're still supporting the occupation. So it's how to then kind of bridge that gap. And I think for many of us, we can become yoga activists by simply taking yoga into parts of our own community that could benefit from it. And that could be to teach in the local prison, or in Europe right now, we've got loads of kind of asylum seekers and refugee camps that become more established. So how can we take this practice there in a way that could benefit people from having a little bit of space just to feel their own breath and what it is to kind of release tension? It could also be how to, rather than having any grand schemes of like taking yoga to conflict areas or, you know, doing anything kind of that dramatic, it can be looking at activating yoga in a way that can really make a difference to someone's personal well-being. And this was going back to kind of the body image stuff, right? It's like we can be doing a yoga practice but still internally suffering greatly, so the yoga isn't activated. So activating yoga would be like having a really good look at like the practice that you're doing, and how does it support your welfare, or is it becoming another kind of addictive and obsessive behavior, or one that's simply ticking the box, okay, I've done my practice today, but it means for the other 22 and a half hours of the day, I can just go along in my little box and not be open to other perspectives, or even make those shifts in my own life that I know I need to make.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I have a friend who has, let's say, activated yoga in her corporate culture in Canada. And even though on some levels there is a kind of tick the box, you know, okay, we did our hour of embodiment and something, there are these side effects of more communication and more calmness and more connection amongst the people in the corporate community. So it's, you know, even if there is that ticking the box kind of thing, I think that this yoga activation is happening on a subtle level, and it's kind of the foot in the door phenomenon. The more people who can recognize, okay, this is not just for overprivileged white Western women, but it's actually for me, no matter who I am, if I'm in a prison or if I, you know, whoever, it really is for everyone.
Yeah. Like Mark Whitwell will say that it's your or our inherent birthright. Right? And it's just this ability to get up in the morning and to be able to move our body and to breathe. So rather than putting any idea that to do a yoga practice means I need to go through these standing poses and then this like seated sequence and so on, it's simply to wake up and the ability to embrace life. And so Mark's been a big influence in how I kind of view a daily practice as well, because for him, he'll say, just do your 7 minutes of yoga a day. But at least that's, you know, that's you kind of taking care of yourself. That's you getting up and recognizing that you have a body today, and that's incredible. And that there's no, oh, I need to be more human. Like, I'm already human. Or I need to be, you know, I've got to kind of awaken. Well, like, you woke up, you know, like, it's already right here. It's just that we've forgotten that. And we're so busy on this treadmill of seeking some ultimate and mysterious idea of enlightenment that, and perfection, and or even happiness, that we forgot to embrace what we already have, even if it might appear to be imperfect.
So that's beautiful. Is that your personal daily practice, just to get 7 minutes? Or what is your, do you have a daily ritual, something that reminds you to come back to this remembrance?
Sure. I mean, I think it's changed. It changes all the time. Definitely in the past, I had quite a strict practice that I would get up and I would do like a 2-hour practice every day. And if I didn't do it, I would feel awful.
Like guilt-ridden,
yeah,
or physically?
Yeah, like both. Like, uh-huh. I'd become really dependent on it. And I'd say, you know, there was a lot of gifts in that, because it definitely taught me a great deal about the poses, right? Our self-practice is our biggest teacher as a teacher. But it also kind of kept me trapped in this illusion that yoga was going through these poses, and it wasn't perhaps sitting with a friend who needed me to listen to her, or it wasn't maybe saying things which were uncomfortable but necessary to say, you know. So all these other aspects of yoga that we perhaps kind of just forget about, mm-hmm. because we've rolled our mat out and done our 2-hour practice. And then recently, since I've been working to get like physical movement back in the injured areas of my body, I really reconnected to a practice in a really different way. Because many of the traditional postures that I would do just didn't get to where I needed to get to. So it was really allowing myself to explore how to move in a different way that could access like the injured parts of my body and maybe hold them for way longer than usual in order to bring about balance, or to bring about kind of a new sense of freedom in that area. And I would also say a huge part of my practice is when I have the luxury to go outside in the wild, and whether, like here, that's to go for a swim every morning, and just to like value and appreciate that those life-giving waters that we have here. But maybe it is to go for a walk up a mountain, if I can do that, you know, and realizing the importance of that as a practice, as opposed to lock myself in four walls and, you know, kind of sweat through a sequence.
Well, I resonate so strongly with what you're sharing. I remember a couple years ago, I was visiting my family in Canada, and I don't know if you've heard that Ram Dass quote, you think you're enlightened, go visit your family, something like this. Mm-hmm. And I remember waking up, rolling out my mat, getting ready to do my practice, and you know, my mom came in and interrupted, and suddenly we needed to go somewhere, and I got so angry, because at that stage it was like, I need to do my practice and then I'm yours for the day, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was like, just that, then I'll be happy, that kind of hungry ghost syndrome. And I realized that I wasn't free. I was dependent on this ritual of doing the practice. And part of why we do yoga is to gain flexibility of the body, but also really that inner work of gaining flexibility in the mind and the heart, and being able to adapt to whatever the moment is presenting, whatever challenges arise. So thank you for reminding me of that.
Yeah, and actually when I was in hospital and I couldn't really move much, I still had the breath. Right. So it was, I was grateful for my practice, for reminding me like I can kind of access that power through the breath, like through bringing in that vitality. And I would even visualize like practicing, and it was like that gave me a huge sense of support, like I was able to support myself somehow, because at that point I was so dependent on other people to take care of me, but I could close my eyes and breathe and visualize myself going through a practice. And I felt like I was like welcoming that vitality in, and that was the one thing that I could do for myself. And so if I hadn't have had all those years of perhaps kind of an unhealthy obsession with it, then maybe that would be harder to access. So I feel there is like great value in these steps, and I'm definitely still on this path. You know, there's so much more, I'm sure, for me to see. but ultimately just to simply embrace, right? To embrace this life and the power that's within us. And our practice can help us to remember that power, or it can be a distraction from that power. So I used to practice and sometimes be completely exhausted when I finished, versus, you know, being able to practice and be like, oh my goodness, wow, there's so much vitality that's moving through me. And that's the opposite of separation, right? That's the real embrace of the connection, which we already are. And then, of course, it makes it much easier to reach out and embrace one another and what life has given us.
Beautiful. I want to touch back on something that you mentioned, which was teaching yoga in prisons, because I know that this is something that you were doing at least a few years ago, I remember. And yeah, just this idea of freedom. And what does the word freedom mean to you? And what was that experience like sharing yoga in prison?
Mm-hmm. So first off, I'd like to say another thank you to Denise Payne for making that opportunity possible. And it really was an opportunity. And I feel with many of these places where we go and we attempt to share something that we think we will help, we're often receiving much more than we're able to give. I feel if we, you know, if you have a chance to go and teach in a place that freedom, physical freedom has been taken away, whether that's in a prison or a care center, or, you know, so many examples of this, then it's a really an incredible opportunity, because it can just show us so much of what we've taken for granted. So many of the incredible men and women who I've met in prison have got it together in a way that I could never dream of. Like, they've really embraced their situation, and it's really humbling to kind of be faced with that, especially when I can walk in and out. And I would only hope that I would have that much grace if I was in that situation. So I feel to have you know, whether you're in prison or you're just, maybe you're living in a tiny flat in the middle of the city somewhere, or you found yourself in a really uncomfortable life situation, if you're able to have enough space, and you don't even need a yoga mat, right? That's another kind of myth. If you have enough space just to raise your arms up towards the sun and remember that, you know, great bigger picture that we're spinning around the cosmos right now, and then if you are able to, on the exhale, kind of bow down towards the earth and in memory and recognition of all that's come before and all that's yet to come, you know, and just this opening and closing as we reach up and we bow down again, that whatever challenging situation we're in, it will pass, right? Just like everything we're desperately trying to cling on to or to attain will also pass. I'm not sure whether that answered your question.
Yeah, well, the question was about freedom, and mm-hmm. and yeah. So, you know, I feel very inspired talking to you, listening to you, and I'm sure many of our listeners do too. I mean, if you want to activate yoga in these communities or prisons or whatever, what would be a first step that you would recommend taking? How do you even begin that journey of being in service? So it's a big question.
Yeah, there's several parts to it. I mean, I'm actually running a course next week, which is all about this. It's called Living Wisdom, and it's to bridge yoga and activism. Mm-hmm. Because I feel one important step is to get really clear about why we want to be in service. And if it's coming from a place of low self-esteem, or wanting to be liked, or wanting to feel that you're of value, then perhaps the first step is to really activate your own yoga and to realize that each one of us is, like I keep saying, an intricate part of the web of life itself. And then from there, explore like what it is you're passionate about. And one of my friends has this beautiful saying, like, find that place where the world's hunger and your passions meet. And that's the unique space, like, it's unique as in only you can fit it. So my background that you read out in the very beginning was that I studied development, and I went really into human rights and democracy I traveled to these countries like Palestine, where I made like really great connections. And at the same time, I had this parallel practice going on of yoga, and I had my own inner journey going on, which continues like as I've just like risen from the ashes right now. So it's how we can kind of make the connection between our skill sets and our life experience and our passion. So that might mean that we, you know, we love yoga and we feel the need to go and share that in places that we've had experiences with, or with people who we've been through a similar experience. You're like, wow, yoga's really helped me. So for example, if yoga really helped you through depression, then how can you then go out and share that with people who are in a similar situation? And you like, you're kind of qualified because you remember what it's like, and you know what worked, and you have this kind of innate empathy that's coming from like a really healthy place, as opposed to one from pity. It's coming from one which is like, right, I've been there, and I know it's possible to rise. Like, even though if you're in it, you think it's not possible to rise from it. Or maybe, like you said, with your friend doing the corporate work, you know, you can be really involved in like that corporate enterprise, and at the same time, maybe there's a yearning for something more, or that depth or that soul that's often missing when perhaps the motivation is profit or meeting goals or having a really unhealthy kind of work schedule. So instead, how can you rebalance that? And rebalance that by, well, what's really valuable? And if I'm able to share a practice with my friends or my colleagues, then maybe we can find like a different working relationship which can unearth like these deeper values that might be motivated by more healthy goals.
Beautiful. Yeah, perfect. So I'm wondering, you have studied with master teachers all over the world, and you've mentioned Denise Payne and you've mentioned Mark Whitwell. Who are some of your main inspirations in this moment, both in the form of people or teachers, and maybe even books that you can recommend to our listeners?
Sure. So I feel, just to, you know, be Bex about it, like one of my biggest inspirations is my friends right now, and just how the ability for people to kind of put their own life on hold, to kind of take the time out to support someone who needs it. I think that's just really, yeah, that's been huge. And I'm really in awe of everyone who's kind of done that for me recently. And on a more traditional path, my teachers, or people I've really been inspired by lately, it's Uma Dinsmore Tully and Shivani Mata. And they've both been really incredible in opening my eyes up to women's health and the many different levels and dimensions of that. And likewise, one of Uma's teachers, Angela Farmer, also. And so these women have, I guess, just like raised some questions for me. Like, why am I practicing what I'm practicing? Like, why am I following certain cues? And when I've asked these questions, I haven't really liked the answers, right? It's like, because that's the way I've been taught, or that's what I've been told. And yet, oftentimes I've been like, well, maybe my body doesn't really want to move like that. Or actually, I've found great freedom of expression through dance. No, I'm not saying that I've merged my dance with my yoga practice, but dance has allowed me to move in more authentic and organic ways, whereas oftentimes with yoga, I've been like frantically trying to attain certain postures, and perhaps I've lost the breath, or perhaps I've injured myself, or perhaps I've been practicing every day of the month regardless of where I am in my menstrual cycle, right? So I haven't really been listening. So one thing that Uma Dinsmore Tully goes into in a lot of detail in one of her books, Yoni Shakti,
which we've recommended 4 or 5 times at this stage in the interviews. So it's clearly a book to read.
It definitely is. It's like 600 and odd pages, and I've read it twice.
Wow.
And it really is looking at what she calls like the inner yoga that's already within a woman's body, which is these innate cycles that we all have, right? Whether we're a man or a woman, or whether we're menstruating or we're not menstruating. But I feel specifically considering that the like biggest demographic of practitioners is kind of menstruating women.
True.
And yet many of them are either taking contraceptives that aren't really in their best interests of their health, or perhaps they are just don't have a very positive relationship with their menstruation and see it as something to be ashamed about or to hide or to kind of ignore. And many also continue to practice every day of the week the same practice, and yet we're changing every day, right? And I really, really would love us to be able to allow for changes, right? For changes in our own life circumstances, because then when things don't go the way we want them to go, it's not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And changes in our own body, because every day, you know, things, we wake up and maybe something hurts, or maybe we get sick, or maybe someone we really care about, you know, isn't well. And I think the more that we resist that or want that to change, then the more we suffer. So our menstrual cycle and acknowledging like this rise and fall that we go through with our ovulation and with our bleed, it's actually like a practice every month in embracing what is,
mm-hmm.
like the ups and the downs. And of course, through our cycle as a woman, through our cycles as a woman, when ultimately we'll, you know, go through menopause, which of course very few women really want to acknowledge or to talk about, because we've been shamed to think that we're going to get older and then we'll be unattractive and we won't be useful to society. And as a result, we're prepared to torture ourselves, right? To torture ourselves psychologically, but also to fill our bodies with things which are not good for it. So this epidemic in like Botox or kind of obsession with our appearance, rather than valuing like the wealth of experience that women have as they grow older, you know? So it's like, I think like awareness of our menstrual cycle can be a wonderful key to unlocking this wisdom within.
Wow, and I think you just raised some topics there that are their own can of worms and weeks long of trainings and retreats, and so thank you for that. And I guess I just want to ask you, because the majority of people who are practicing, as you say, are menstruating women, what would you say one or two key things to know about practice in relation to having one's moon cycle or having your period? What are a couple things that we should know that just maybe aren't in our everyday education system?
I would say, firstly, read the book Wild Power.
I'm halfway through.
Yeah. Alexandra Pope has some, you know, just the way that she's explained this sign of ups and downs through the via positiva as we come out of our bleed up to ovulation, right? That's when our energy kind of starts to rise again and we get more active. And so that's the time that perhaps our practice reflects that. And then there's the via negativa, which is from like that downward flow from the peak of ovulation down to our bleed, where our energy levels just start to go down again. And if we really pay attention, so by charting every day how you feel, like physically, and perhaps noticing that there is this cycle that happens.
Mm.
And so then if I'm actually feeling really tired for a week of the month, then rather than feeling, oh, what's wrong with me, or I should be doing this, or getting down on ourselves and pushing ourselves through a really strong practice, then it'd be like, oh, wow, isn't that incredible? Like, my body's preparing to bleed. Now is the time for me to go to a restorative class or a yoga nidra, or maybe just to go out and have some time in nature alone and have some quiet time.
Mm.
So I think those two things, like getting informed, so really, getting to be more aware of what menstrual conscious awareness is about. And secondly, about your own cycle, which is charting that every day. And so then when we have these ebbs and flows, rather than wanting everything to be the same and feeling that we're somehow failing because we've got these dips in our energy or perhaps a change in our mood, right? And if we can just accept that and embrace that as this like incredible intelligence of our body that's saying, hang on, you need some alone time right now, or you need some time just to kind of go in and investigate, you know, where's this emotion coming from, or just feel it rather than repress it or ignore it or push ourselves into situations that we're actually not wanting to be in, then we can probably really like ourselves a lot more, you know, and take care of ourselves a lot more.
It's such a journey, every moon cycle. For me, I know that I've been charting my cycle for a long time, but yeah, just really embracing the wisdom that comes from having the knowledge. It's a practice in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But that's what yoga is about, right? Is getting to know ourselves more so that we can be more peaceful, happy, and free.
Totally. I mean, it is, well, you know, that's how I perceive yoga to be. And yet, if we look back through the yoga tradition, maybe it's about just getting out of the body, right? And that ascension that was there, and saying, well, the body is full of pain, or it's a source of pain, so let's just get rid of it and then, you know, achieve moksha. Mm. And I feel that's also a really...
What's moksha? For the people who don't know.
So there's many different interpretations of moksha, but essentially it's to be liberated from the physical body and return to that oneness, if there is such a thing as oneness. That's a really simplified version. And I feel for many of us when we practice yoga, it's not that we want to be free from the body. And in fact, we're not really looking for the state of moksha at all. In fact, we're probably looking for the opposite. We're looking for ways to be more embodied, to allow ourselves to feel even more, to welcome connection with one another rather than feeling that we need to kind of be wary of that and shut ourselves off in a retreat center or an ashram or a cave, you know. And so it's helped me a great deal to look at the difference between some of the many, you know, many, many lineages of yoga and where we are today with our own kind of ambitions of what we want from yoga,
mm-hmm.
and realizing that what we're practicing isn't really the same as where it's come from, you know. And so I just felt that was important to mention.
Yeah, thank you for that. So I have some friends who are arguing that this should be called the Francie Show, but in the meantime it's called the Pure Flow Yoga Podcast, because that's mm-hmm. my project, and flow is a state of kind of letting go of the mind and being in the flow, in that timeless state. And I'm wondering, what does pure flow mean to you? And when you're not in a state of pure flow, how do you navigate back?
That's a great question. First of all, I really think it should be called the Francie Show, because it's like, it really, like, you are the show, right? And as for flow, it's about embracing what is, okay? And that, for me, means if there's situations in my life that I'm not appreciating, then how do I either get myself out of them or actively surrender to them, right? So again, going back to my recent situation, since that's what's so fresh for me, is that I couldn't really change the fact that I'd been physically hurt. And so the next step was, how did I embrace that,
mm-hmm.
rather than wishing it hadn't have happened, because the more I wished it hadn't have happened, then the less I was in flow with the reality.
More suffering. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's this kind of phrase that I've been using, which is active surrender. So it's not just, oh, you know, being a victim to something. It's like, right, this is what life's given me, and how can I embrace that? And how can I embrace that, not just to put a positive spin on it for the sake of it, but to really be able to hold the depth of feeling, you know, and recognizing that there's so many layers to certain events and so many things that lead us into each situation. It's you know, it's, we've got our roots firmly in everything that life hands us, even if it seems to come out of nowhere. And I feel that's really important to remember, because many times, like a certain accident, if you want to call it an accident, can happen. And we're like, wow, that came out of nowhere, or why me? You know, or, I can't handle this. Mm-hmm. And yet realizing that, again, thank you, Denise, we're never given more than what we can handle, right? It's just we often forget that. And so allowing...
Oof, I got goosebumps with that one.
Yeah, and so being in flow, for me, it's remembering that. How can I embrace this situation rather than resisting it or wanting it to stop? And a physical practice can allow us to do that, because with every inhale, we're receiving life, and with every exhale, we're giving it back. So if we were just to take a long, deep breath in and hold that breath in and say, no, I'm not giving it back, I want to keep it like this forever, like, we're not in flow.
No.
The flow is the exhale, right? Which will then, of course, if we keep exhaling forever, we're going to run out of breath, and at some point we're going to have to inhale again. So it is, that's the spando, which we often speak about, the contraction and expansion, the rhythm of life force itself. So yeah, flow, it's just allowing for that.
Active surrender. I am going to remember that. That's a real gem. Thank you so much for that. A couple more questions. I want to sort of fast forward a little bit to the future and just ask you, is there a legacy that you are hoping to leave? You know, when you do leave the body, because this is a natural part of the cycle of life. We're all...
Wow, do you know what? I feel if anything, it would be to leave as little impact as possible. You know, I feel like today I was just in my shower looking at my shampoo bottle and looking at all the plastic that's just there and from me. And, you know, just like, wow, I'm going to leave a real impact on this world. And it's not necessarily a positive impact. It's all the things that I've consumed and all the things I haven't needed and all the other people's values or the Western culture's values that I've kind of adapted without really questioning, mm-hmm. or because it's been too hard to kind of not to accept them. And so what I would feel is that I could leave as little impact, like as little footprint as possible, and so that I haven't taken too much, or at least I was able to give back what I've taken.
I think that's a big impact that you're going to leave, a big legacy, is just all this wisdom and sharing that experience and sharing these values. So both.
Mm.
Beautiful. And you've got a couple retreats or trainings coming up. What are the projects that you're working on now that you're excited to share?
Oh, I'm sharing sort of like three different things right now. So I mentioned before, Living Wisdom. And I've done so much study of the history and philosophy of yoga, because I've been fascinated about how on earth what we're doing in the contemporary yoga scene relates back to the yoga tradition.
Uh-huh.
And this kind of gap between the two, and how we got from, or how we got from here to kind of associating this with what's come out of India, amazes me. So I put together an 8-day course which will go through as much as you can in only 8 days, some of the history and various philosophies of yoga. And then from that, explore certain themes that many of which we kind of take on today without really realizing what they're all about. So, yeah, things like the yamas and the niyamas, right? These values that we have. Or when we talk about awakening, what do we really mean with that? Or are we able to embrace the cycles, including cycles of life and death? And if we are able to embrace that, then perhaps we'll stop clinging so firmly to one another or to certain material objects or ideas of success.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those things won't be so important anymore, because we'll be okay with the fact that one day we weren't here, what we weren't here, and one day we won't be here again. You know, we're just going back to that place. And then again, that will lead into the yoga activism, which is what skills do we have as unique individuals with a unique life experience, and how best to kind of embrace our life by honoring our skills and our passions and our life experiences. And that might be through the modality of teaching yoga, or it might be through a yoga practice that then allows us to support our work or our family or our mm-hmm. relationships or friendships. You know, it can be on such a so-called small scale, but one that's really, really important. And then the second immersion I'm working on, it's called Unwind the Feminine. And I know this is like, it seems quite a hard kind of topic to speak about right now, because this idea or concept of the feminine is one that's been so misused and misconceived. And what I'm getting at here is how we can unpack aspects of our yoga practice and yoga training beyond the largely patriarchal framework which it's grown up in, and look at what's been left out. And this speaks to various aspects of what it is to be a woman in 2019, with a woman's body and a woman's cycle, and pressures, cultural and social pressures of productivity, whether that be motherhood or creatively or sexually. And also how we can perhaps adapt our own personal practice in a way that's supportive of our own needs, rather than adapting to somebody else's practice that's supportive to a bigger idea of what it is to be a woman today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the third immersion I'm working on, it's wilderness and yoga, and that's taking our yoga practice out into nature and practicing under the trees and going for long walks and just really getting back to the basics. And I feel that then there's very little kind of so-called teaching that needs to be done, because we've got it all within us. It's just that often we're too busy to remember. So that's an opportunity for us to slow down, to feel, and to take rest.
Wow, where are you offering that?
That's going to be in Yorkshire in the UK in July.
Oh, wow, sounds epic.
You can come.
Can I?
Yeah.
I might be in Canada then, but that's wonderful, Bex. I love what you're sharing with the planet. I love the wisdom that you're immersing yourself in and then humbly dispensing in these different ways through these workshops, but mostly just in your essence and in your being, in your daily interactions with people. It's so beautiful to, you know, have you, you know, we share a community here, so it's so wonderful to witness you and be a part of this journey with you. How can our listeners find you?
I have a very basic website that's called Freedom Through Movement. So you can just check that out, www.freedomthroughmovement.
I'll include it in the show notes.
.org. And if you're around next week or the week after in Ubud and would like to join my immersion, then I would be very happy to offer a special $100 off for any listeners to the Francie Show who would like to join my immersions.
Oh, that's so generous. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Well, it's been an absolute gift and pleasure to share with you, and thank you so, so, so much.
Thank you, Francie.
Thank you so much for listening and tuning into our podcast today. I really hope that you got a lot from it and feel really inspired and uplifted. Please help us help you by spreading the love. Tell a friend, leave us a 5-star review, and make sure to sign up to our love letter at pureflow.yoga to stay connected with the community and receive our free weekly love and inspirations, as well as be the first to know about our upcoming blog and podcast episodes. We're also going to share with you special deals on our Thailand yoga retreats that we just don't share anywhere else. And If you want to help support these efforts, which it takes a lot of time and love and energy to spread the love in this way, and we want to keep doing this for you. So please consider sharing a monthly donation, a contribution, and you can find that at purefloat.yoga/podcast. So hope you have a really beautiful day, a really beautiful week. Feel free to reach out anytime, and sending you so much love. Namaste and welcome to the Pure Flow Yoga Live Class and Conversation Podcast, a place where we get to go deep, connect, and open our bodies, hearts, and mind together to spread love, inspiration, and good vibes. We're living in truly extraordinary times. The world is changing in a unique, profound, and unprecedented way. The best approach to staying centered, balanced, grounded, strong, and at ease in these times of transition is to prepare ourselves spiritually, physically, and emotionally. I believe yoga, meditation, and music are helping to awaken, unify, and harmonize people all around the world. So I really hope you enjoy these classes. If you want to stay connected, sign up for our love letter at pureflow.yoga to stay totally current on all of our upcoming blog and podcast releases, as well as our online and in-person events around the world. And if you love what we're doing, please consider supporting us with a small donation at pureflow.yoga/podcast. Your journey to being more inspired, embodied, and connected begins now.